Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi, welcome into the 19th Hole Golf Show. My name is Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you with us. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. You can follow Golf News Net as well on Twitter at Golf News Net. Find my work at golfnewsnet.com as well on Yahoo Sports' Double Ball Golf Blog, sports.yahoo.com. So we come back from an off week in the FedEx Cup playoffs with the BMW Championship, a 70-player no-cut field just outside of Chicago at Conway Farms. And we're going to whittle the field down from the playoffs from 70 to 30 after Sunday. And those are the 30 guys that get into the first three majors of next year, as well get into the Tour Championship and get a nice bonus from the FedEx Cup purse pool, of which, by the way, 150 players, the top 150 in the FedEx Cup at the end of the regular season, get at least a little bit of money. But the big bucks are available in the Tour Championship. And so we've got a little bit of storylines here. We've got Jason Day, who's number one in points, is probably going to stay that way unless someone in the top five wins. We've got Jordan Spieth coming off of two missed cuts, obviously going to make the cut this week because there isn't one, although it goes down officially as making one. You've got Ricky Fowler, who bumps up to third after winning the Deutsche Bank Championship. And you've got Rory McIlroy, who's just kind of hanging out there, needs a good week this week to be in the top five, but will certainly be a part of the Tour Championship field with two wins in the regular season. So those are kind of the names that we're looking at as the most likely contenders to win the FedEx Cup. And then you can throw in Henrik Stenson, who's played two very good playoff events. You've got Bubba Watson, who does not like Atlanta whatsoever and may play well here, but has a predispensation against Eastlake, so he's kind of screwing himself over. But he could finish in the top five and put himself in a position where it's a win and win situation for him. And we are now into week two of the NFL season. And obviously week one is always a big deal. You've seen millions of DraftKings and FanDuel ads trying to convince you to play daily fantasy golf, and they've been doing it for well over a month now because they know the lead up into the NFL season is just as big, if not bigger, than week one. Week one is big, and then there's kind of this big drop-off because fans realize how good or bad their teams are, at least at the start, so you're either encouraged or discouraged. And 16 teams are certainly encouraged. 16 teams are probably discouraged to differing degrees. If you're a Raiders fan, you lost in awful fashion to the Bengals. You probably think that the hopes that you placed in Jack Del Rio are not founded. If you're a Chicago Bears fan and lost to my Green Bay Packers, then you probably feel like there's some hope, but that you still suck. And so that kind of goes downhill from there. However, the FedEx Cup playoffs conclude in the first few weeks of the NFL season before more fans than not have realized what their team really is going to be for the season. And so you're ending the golf year, the golf season, at the peak of NFL popularity, at least before you get to the playoffs when it kind of picks back up in the reverse bell curve or the upside down bell curve. And I think Jason Sobel was the guy who made this point, really good point, I thought, with ESPN.com in a column this week. I think it was yesterday even, saying that the FedEx Cup playoffs should end on Labor Day weekend. They should end on that Monday, and from there, or I would do it Sunday, but should end that weekend, and that could be the unofficial end of the summer, and then gracefully step aside as the NFL takes over. And I think it's a good concept. I think it's a meaningful idea, and it's one, obviously, the PGA Tour hasn't paid all that much attention to over the 9 years. This is the ninth year of the FedEx Cup concept. The tour season has always ended, or at least the FedEx Cup has ended, now it's the season end as well, has been at the end of September. So they wanted to try and have some slight overlap with football, but not completely capitulate to football and say, it's your stage, we're getting out of the way. I think maybe that's a good idea now, almost 10 years into the concept, for a couple of different reasons. One, football's popularity hasn't waned all that much, which, in fact, it's arguably as popular as ever, which means those people who would watch golf are watching NFL football on Sundays when tournaments end. Bad idea. Even worse, college football has become more popular in the last decade, arguably more than ever. And so Saturdays are also kind of shot for audiences because you have a slate of games that start at 11 in the morning, depending on where you live, 12 on the East Coast, and go until 11:30 at night. There is football on every part of the day. At least with the NFL, there are prescribed times when there's NFL football. There's 1 to 4, 4 to 7, and 8:30 to 11:30, more or less. But it occupies a day of the week, a whole day of the week, but college football just goes all live long day. And you can there are so many games, you can find the one that you want. I mean, you could have a slate of turds in the 1 o'clock showings on the NFL and just tune out for a while and come back for the fours or the primetime game, which is usually good. But in college football, every hour there's at least one good game, one compelling game. So the NFL and college football combined to be this juggernaut that is football and just sucks up the entire sporting interest. And golf somewhat loses out from that. I mean, there is a core golf audience. There are people who are going to watch golf regardless of what's on the other channel. They want to watch golf. They would rather watch golf. But you lose out on the potential for casual fans and to grab the media attention that you would get more broadly if this wrapped up, say, in late August, as opposed to, I don't know, another in the end of September. And so I think Sobel makes a good point, and I wonder how that all works out, because you'd have to shift to playoff events, obviously. You'd have to kind of change the week off would go away. That's usually in the middle. Sometimes it's after the Barclays, but usually it's in the middle after the Deutsche Bank. And you'd have to find a way to get all those four events in a row or in a five-week stretch. Problem here is that you have two events that need to comply and move to help the playoffs that I don't think are necessarily going to do that. One being the PGA Championship, because you have and the other being the WGC Bridgestone Invitational. They're played one after another, the Bridgestone and then the PGA Championship in early August. That gives way to the Wyndham Championship, which gives way to a week where players kind of take off. And then you have the Barclays right after Wyndham and the Deutsche Bank. And then you get into the week off and the final two legs of the playoffs. So you'd kind of have to move the Wyndham away from being the cutoff event. You would then have a week there where you could put in a playoff event right after the PGA Championship. You could maybe go an extra week and have it conclude sooner. But I think it logistically right now it would be very difficult to pull off. But I get the sentiment, and that is that golf isn't winning against football. And there were no illusions that golf would win against football in 2007. And kudos to the PGA Tour for obviously recognizing that and not trying to compete all season long with the NFL, whereas under the old concept or without the FedEx Cup concept, there was supposedly meaningful PGA Tour golf in October and November, and no one gave two craps about that. Except now with the wraparound schedule, there's still meaningful golf in October and November, and no one gives two craps about it. Except it counts toward the next season, and it gives players who have earned their card through the Web.com Tour Finals or barely hung on to their card through the PGA Tour a chance to get a little bit of a leg up on the better players going into the new year, because you know most of the guys who are ranked in the top 50 in the world are not going to play in October and November. Noted exception are the eight guys from the PGA Tour who negotiated an alternate field or a competing event exemption to go play in the Turkish Airlines Open in 2013. Those guys are going to play in the Fries.com Open, at least some of them. Some did last year. But other than that, you're not going to see a whole lot of top-tier players competing in the months of October and November, save for the McGladrey Championship, because that's near Sea Island or at Sea Island Resort. So that's going to create an opportunity on St. Simon's Island for a lot of players who live in that area to have a home game. So they play in that event, so you're going to get some good players for that. But other than that, nope, no thanks. Season's over, year's over, pretty much, until you get into those silly season events and those events overseas, like the Aussie Triple Crown, where you can get a nice appearance fee to go and play. It's just pretty much as big as the first place check, if not bigger. So guys are going to go do that. So this is kind of the last couple of weeks we're going to see Spieth and Day for a while. We'll see McIlroy as part of the European Tour's Race to Dubai Finals series, but he's only going to play three of those events. So, and that kind of spills into November, which, again, when we're talking about silly season type stuff. I don't know what the solution to it is. I still believe in the FedEx Cup concept. I like it. I think it could be tweaked. I mean, we've talked about tweaks over the years and on this podcast fairly recently. But overall, the concept is a good one. It is way better than the alternative, because if there were no playoff concept, if there were no crescendo and conclusion to the year, then golf would just languish. And there would be events in September, regardless of whether there's football or not. Just no one would care. And top players wouldn't be incentivized to play, because $10 million is a lot of money regardless of how much you make. And guys want $10 million bucks if it's available and to be earned doing the thing they do better than anything else. So that concept is very good. Ensuring good tournaments, great tournaments in September is a big deal after the PGA Championship. But it doesn't work against football. Now here's the retort. And if you're Tim Fincham, I'm sure you've read Jason's piece and here's the retort. Tim Fincham's job is not to make fans happy. It's not to increase ratings necessarily. It is to provide playing opportunities to his players, even though they're supposedly independent contractors. But I digress. He's supposed to be providing playing opportunities for his guys. And he has created a huge playing opportunity with the FedEx Cup playoffs. He's gotten FedEx to labor out a whole boatload of money, and for them to pay for this pot every year, $35 million bonus pool. Obviously, there's another $35 million or so sitting around in tournament prize money for other title sponsors. But the FedEx Cup is branded throughout the entire season, and FedEx kind of gets the payoff on that, apparently. And they like that. That's a huge playing opportunity. There are also playing opportunities beyond September when the new season starts. And that was in part salvaged by Fincham deciding, all right, well, we'll cut off the season after the playoffs instead of having this fall series idea, which all of the sponsors hated because their tournaments weren't giving FedEx Cup points. They were just giving money and world ranking points, and they were kind of missing out on the fun. So all those events said, well, hey, wait a second. If you're going to give points out, we want points, or we're just going to shut this thing down. We're not going to do it anymore. It's not worth it. So Fincham said, okay, well, I see your point. We'll give you points. And sure enough, the fields got a little bit better. Not the best, but they got better. And the idea of starting the new season after the playoffs created room for Web.com to come in and be the title sponsor of the tour, of the developmental tour, which was the nationwide tour in 2012, coming in and saying, well, we will revamp the concept. We will create a playoff system for the Web.com tour, which allows for PGA Tour players who didn't make the playoffs to feed in, the top players to feed in, and we'll have 150 players in events that will conclude after the FedEx Cup ends, so we get a little bit of rub to that, and people will be interested in it. Sounds like a deal, Web.com? Okay, great. You're in. And got them on board as a title sponsor, and kind of had to compromise a little bit of integrity, I think, of the tours to do it, but he did it, and he has created playing opportunities. Those events on the Web.com Tour Finals are $1 million events. There are no other events on the Web.com Tour schedule that are worth $1 million purse. And I'll get back to that in a minute. But Fincham, that's what Fincham has done with concocting opportunities and keeping them alive for both the PGA Tour and the Web.com Tour. So he has done all of this in the sake of what his charge is as commissioner, which is to create playing opportunities for players to make good money and make a living playing professional golf. It is not to make sure that we like the format of the FedEx Cup. It is not to make sure that the season ends and starts on our calendar and when it's convenient for us. He does not care about that, primarily because we don't care about it enough to not care about golf if it doesn't change, you know, if it changes. So that's the calculus. And sure, there are people who can bitch about it and go, okay, well, I'm just not going to watch golf in October and November. Tim Fincham really does not care all that much, because there are certain people who are going to watch golf no matter what. And those people have Golf Channel, and they're going to watch the fall series events, which are now the start of the PGA Tour season. And so he's fine with that. He's made that decision. He knows the ratings aren't going to be really all that special, but it is an opportunity for everybody involved, players, sponsors, media, to have exposure and a chance to look at the sport and be on a stage with people who spend money. So there. That's why that's there. That's why the FedEx Cup isn't going to change. That's why the schedule isn't going to change. That's why the logistics aren't going to change. This is what it is. And the PGA Tour has decided, at least for the near future, that their season is going to end in week 3 or week 4 of the NFL season and week 5 or so of the college football season. Is it bad for ratings comparison? Yeah, but then again, how many people that watch NFL football and college football will go, well, there's nothing on today, so I guess I'm going to watch golf. No, that doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen, at least very often. So, again, I agree with Jason's sentiment. Golf needs a little bit of a break. It at least does for a fan, because otherwise you just lose track of what tournaments mean anything and whether you should care this week or next and all that stuff. I get that. But from what the charge is for Tim Fincham, it doesn't matter. He's going to keep doing it the way he's going to do it because it guarantees playing opportunities for the most number of players possible. End of story. Speaking of playing opportunities, I was speaking with a Web.com Tour player, former Web.com Tour player, the other day, and we were talking about the infrastructure of the Web.com Tour and that not as much money as you would think is put into the Web.com Tour budget, much less its purses, compared to the Champions Tour, which is about to get a playoff series. In November, they will announce the full details of this new playoff series for the Charles Schwab Cup. But we've already figured out that there is a second event. There will be a third playoff event, including the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. The second event has been already announced. That is an event in Richmond, Virginia, that starts next year. And there's a third coming. I'm not sure where that venue will be, what city will host it, but that's coming. So the 50-plus guys get a playoff. The developmental circuit gets a playoff of sorts. The PGA Tour has a playoff, and they've become enamored with this concept. But the PGA Tour massively subsidizes the Champions Tour. I mean, to a deep, deep amount of money. Something in the area of $30 million a year subsidizes the Champions Tour. And as this player pointed out to me accurately, it flies in the face of what the PGA Tour says it is trying to do in developing golfers who can compete on the PGA Tour, where you would throw these guys a little bit more money, a little bit more TV time, and a little bit more money in their pocket and purses so that they can make a living playing golf. Because if you take, for example, the first few events of the Web.com Tour season, they're in South America and Central America. And unless you finish, more or less, in the top 10 in each of those events, you're going to lose money on those trips because you're flying into South America, you're staying in a hotel where you want to stay at, not necessarily a five-star joint, but certainly not a place where you'd feel uncomfortable. So you're going to stay there, and then you have to make good money because the purses on these events are anywhere from $600,000 to $700,000, meaning that if you win, you get anywhere from $120,000 to $150,000, but that money falls off pretty precipitously after you get the top three or four. So at the end, you can have one good high finish and probably still break out even, but otherwise you're probably going to lose money. So these guys return to the United States having just eaten a huge write-off, a huge loss, when the Chitimacha event starts in Louisiana in March. And all the players who tried to get ahead of the reshuffle by playing in those events, unless you've won, unless you have a second place or something like that, you're in trouble. Financially in trouble. You feel it. You're stressed. It's tough. And for whatever reason, the PGA Tour has not decided to subsidize the Web.com Tour in the same way that it subsidizes the Champions Tour. And I think that there is a case to be made here because the Web.com Tour is clearly the future of the PGA Tour because it is the only path to the PGA Tour. So it is the future. It deserves a little bit more money. Not to have purses that are 10%, literally 10% the size of the purse of your average PGA Tour event. I mean, purses on the Web.com Tour for like $600,000 to $800,000. Sometimes they approach $1 million. On the PGA Tour, there are events, a minimum $5 million. Most are closer to six, some in the eight, some in the nines. Five now are worth $10 million. So you mean to tell me that the future of the PGA Tour only gets to play for 10% of the PGA Tour purse. That seems kind of ridiculous. So why not bump up the prize pool, double it? I mean, make it 1.2 per event. That sounds pretty reasonable. A winner gets 18% of the check, so they make approximately $216,000 is what they would make. That's not bad. I think that's a good amount of money. But the more important thing is it filters down through the guys that make cuts, the guys that need to make money to continue to live, because these guys are trying to cut every possible corner they can so they don't have to spend money. But at the end of the day, this is their profession. This isn't just about breaking even on your own expenses. It's about trying to feed a family. It's trying to plant roots. Maybe you have children. I mean, a lot of these guys who go back to the web.com tour are guys who played on the PGA Tour and maybe didn't make a whole lot of money, so they didn't get to save a whole lot. So they can't just keep going and going and going week after week after week without a paycheck or not doing well and not be freaked the hell out how they're going to make the bills work, just like most of us deal with. So throwing a little bit of money toward those guys, I think, is a good idea. I agree with the player I spoke with. However, the PGA Tour seems against that notion. And what was told to me was that one guy in particular on the board, the PGA Tour player board, does not want to throw money at the web.com tour. And that guy is a web.com tour graduate, of all things, feeling that since he was able to get through the web.com tour back when there was basically no money whatsoever on the web.com tour, that the current crop should be able to do the same thing. And the easy argument, just as we argued with the FedEx Cup dates, is that the world has changed. The web.com tour is, for one, the only path to the PGA Tour. There is no Q school to the PGA Tour anymore, so you can't just have one great week and suddenly find yourself in a multi-million dollar potential job. That doesn't exist anymore. So you got to slug it out on the web.com tour. And if you have to slug it out there for crappy money, that doesn't sound like a good proposition, especially considering that the players who compete on the web.com tour now, again, because it is the only path to the PGA Tour, are really good. From week to week, you could interchange the crappiest 75 guys in a PGA Tour field with 75 guys from the web.com tour who are reasonably good in own form. No one would notice the difference. They would perform about the same. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So the guys who compete on the web.com tour, by and large, are PGA Tour caliber players in waiting if they could just break through. They just need a good season. And I'm not saying that every player obviously plays well enough to deserve that opportunity. But across the board, the web.com tour is so much deeper than 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I mean, the tour is 25 years old. It's deeper than it's ever been. And I think that deserves a little bit of a bump in pay. It also deserves a little bit of pub. I mean, I've covered some web.com tour events in the past. They're the most bare bones operations as possible. And that is in part because the PGA Tour throws them no budget. And these guys barely get on TV. I really love watching the web.com tour on TV. I like hearing Witt and Craig Perks call it. I love the theme song. I think it's better than the PGA Tour theme song. I like a lot about it. But the golf courses aren't extremely difficult. They're not really PGA Tour conditions. There's very little rough, this player told me, and I think that's accurate of web.com tour events. So the long guys just blast it without regard for rough or hazard. They just hit it as hard as they can, go find it, put it close to the pin with some spin, make birdies. And there's no value to hitting fairway. So it's not actually, in most players' minds, a really good preparation for the PGA Tour, because PGA Tour courses have deeper rough, smaller fairways, they're a little bit longer in some cases. Some cases are actually shorter, but they're more difficult. Greens are firmer, faster, less receptive. And the courses on the web.com tour, as well as the Cantor and the Latino Tour, Latino America Tour, they're easy. I mean, for these guys, they're easy golf courses. They shoot 20 under par and don't blink an eye. And if this is going to be the future of golf, then I think I agree again the conditions need to be more reminiscent of what you're going to see on the PGA Tour as a new player than just playing as you would to put plunk down your own money, go play a mini tour event, which is basically legal gambling. So I think that going forward, I don't know that the focus should be on how the FedEx Cup works and when it finishes. I think we've got that in stone at this point. There's money behind it. There's effort behind it. I think that the issue moving forward should be figuring out how to make the web.com tour more relevant, because I think you could argue from week to week that the web.com tour has a better feel than the European tour. It is the second best tour on the planet most weeks. And if that's the case, it should be treated like the second best tour on the planet most weeks. Not limited TV time, not buried at 1 and 2 in the morning on Golf Channel in standard definition, none of that. Give it the treatment that it deserves, give it the purses that it deserves, and for as much as the Champions Tour is a delightful exhibition, you can build an audience for the web.com tour and take a little budget money from the Champions Tour, because people will come watch Tom Watson hit golf balls in an asphalt parking lot. Not as many people will go watch Patton Kizzire hit golf balls in a parking lot. So these guys, the future of golf, needs a little infrastructure, needs a little name building. It helps the sport down the line, because then the PGA Tour gets these guys as more of a known commodity as opposed to who the hell is that when they show up on a tee sheet on the PGA Tour. And I think that is a better branding exercise than throwing cash to the 50-plus circuit, which is not self-sustaining but could use a little bit of a kind of peg knock here and there to reinvigorate itself and to brand itself as more of a fun exhibition tour that is an access tour, getting to see these guys up close and personal and fan-friendly, as opposed to the web.com tour, which is serious as hell because there's a lot on the line, including just trying to make sure you can get the groceries down the belt without bouncing a check. So that's just my little soapbox on that. I wanted to share in the podcast because I think it's a worthwhile place to have that discussion. So let me know your thoughts on what I had to say this week at Ryan Ballinger on Twitter, at Golf News Net on Twitter. Ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com is my email address if you want to throw me something that way. Or send us a review on iTunes. Any 5-star review with comments and questions will make the air. Thanks to Mike from New York for the 5-star review. We love it. We appreciate it. And we send the love back to you. So for next week, we're going to talk about the results of the BMW Championship. We'll also talk about the Solheim Cup, which starts this week in Germany, runs this weekend. The Americans are trying to avoid a 3-match losing streak to the Europeans and win for the first time on foreign soil since 2007. So interesting set of matches, pitting Captain Julie Angster and her 12 charges, 11 of which won the 2013 team against Karen Koch and her squad, which has a little bit of turnover, but not too much, and they're the favorites in Germany this week. So we'll talk about that as well and get you ready for the final event of the playoffs, the Tour Championship. You can listen to our commentary, our complimentary audio coverage of the BMW Championship on Rabble.tv for the first 2 days of the tournament, Thursday and Friday, from 1 p.m. Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern each day. We'll give you those times on our website, golfnewsnet.com, as well. So we'll give you an alternative coverage to the BMW Championship, which you can listen along what's happening on TV or even before it hits TV at 2 in the afternoon. So we'll keep you up to date on Rabble.tv. Until next week, I'm Ryan Ballinger saying thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.